Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Philippines has elected by historic margins Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of the late dictator, and his running mate Sara Duterte, the daughter of the outgoing president. Does this reflect a continued preference for strongman politics and a growing disenchantment with liberal democracy? Joining us now is Robbie Alampay. He is the founder and chairperson of Puma Public Productions. He's also the first executive director of the Southeast Asian Press Alliance. Robbie, taking a look at how the media has explained the Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s win, a lot of the attention has been focused on the historical revisionism on social media by the Marcos campaign, which paints, say, the earlier Marcos era as an era of stability and order. I'm just wondering whether you think the framing, the media's framing of this, is an adequate explanation of the results of the elections.
First of all, good evening, Melissa and Sharad. Thank you for having me. First, is that certainly is one of the biggest factors, one of the most troubling factors that was at play. Not just a factor, in fact, a force. Disinformation, revisionist history, and basically the gaming and the weaponization of social media as well. All of this coming together, not just in the Philippines. We've seen experiments on this in many democracies, in many countries. We know the United States itself fell to the same deadly mix. But certainly that is the disinformation, the revisionism, the rehabilitation of the name of the Marcoses and their legacy of corruption and human rights abuses. It certainly came into play.
Robbie, sorry, if I can ask you about Leni Robredo, because she becomes, as the kind of alternative candidate, she becomes a foil against which the Marcoses were pit in much of the framing. But she was, in fact, vice president during Duterte's administration. And so in some ways, she surely must be held accountable or could be said to be complicit in the many rights abuses of the outgoing administration.
Well, there's something that people need to understand about the political system in the Philippines and the way we elect the president and vice president. We have such a thing as an opposition vice president, essentially, and that is actually by and large how it's always, for the most part, more often than not, goes. Because the system is that the president is elected separate from the vice president. So you don't have the tandems and the teams getting elected as people are perhaps more familiar with in the United States. So you don't have Barack Obama and Joe Biden getting elected basically on the strength of just the standard bearer. In the Philippines, you field the president, you field the vice president, and very often, more often than not, the president runs... the president wins and then has to live with a vice president. And that's assuming that the president has plans for a modus vivendi. But from day one, for example, from day one, from the inauguration of President Duterte, he refused to have Vice President Leni Robredo even in the same building. And Vice President Leni Robredo was forced to have her own inauguration in another end of Metro Manila. And that really defines the relationship and the sidelining of Vice President Leni Robredo. She was not, for the most part, and really in effect, she was never even given a real cabinet position to which she could be effective in any part of government. So, no, there is no way that that can be framed, that the sins of the Duterte administration can be visited upon the term of Vice President Leni Robredo.
Okay, can I ask you then what Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s administration might look like based on the policies that he might have campaigned on? Again, the you know, the incoming president will be inheriting from Duterte seemingly a mountain load of problems with challenges of poverty and unemployment that has been exacerbated by the pandemic. What has he said that he's going to do as he enters office?
That's really one of the biggest problems with the win of Mr. Marcos. He ran on a strategy basically of no talk, no mistake. From the very start, all the surveys had projected that his tandem with Sara Duterte Carpio would place him as the front runner. And as front runners are wont to do, they avoid debates, they avoid media interviews, they cherry pick which media they will talk to. Mr. Marcos, it's fair to say, it's not even a controversial thing to say, and it's just plainly factual, avoided all the official debates set up by the Commission on Elections. Avoided all the debates set up by the Association of Broadcasters, the Independent Association of Broadcasters in the Philippines. And everything was really, as far as platforms were concerned, he just kept to literally one word, unity. And that was the slogan, that was the campaign slogan, that was the platform, if you could call it a platform. And at the end of the day, everybody is left to as we're trying to do now, try to parse through very, very few messages, very, very few statements, and very, very few words to say what is his economic policy, what are his plans, what are his strategies, what's the foreign policy thinking. And so it is just something that he was happy to leave as a rhetorical question. He never really offered a platform. Not in any kind of detail that allows economists to say that with confidence that this is what we can expect.
Okay, Robbie, if I could turn back to the question of why Marcos won then, right? And the charisma of the family and so on and so forth. There's also one theory, and it's advanced by a sociologist, Marco Garrido, who says that actually there is a growing disenchantment in the Philippines, among Filipinos, of the kind of liberal democratic system that it hasn't delivered for ordinary people. And so that one response has been, and Marcos is an example of it, a return to this a desire for a strongman politics. I mean, do you agree that that is part of the reason why Marcos Jr. won?
No, I really don't think so. I don't think it is disenchantment with liberal democracy per se. I don't even think that the language that people would use would get to that. I think the way Filipinos would express it is that they are disenchanted with traditional politicians, or as we say in the Philippines, trapo. And that is a portmanteau that literally means piece of rag, right? So they're sick and tired of traditional politicians. What is ironic and what is apparent, however, is that the Duterte administration had framed the liberal democratic government of Noynoy Aquino as the traditional politicians. They are all traditional politicians, of course, whether we're talking about families with authoritarian bent and history, or we're talking about, you know, really a very proud strongman like Rodrigo Duterte, or the liberal Democrats. You can all lump them all together into what Filipinos would think of as traditional politicians. These are career politicians. We've been hearing their names for the longest time. But what the Duterte administration was really able to do was to frame, well, what's a traditional politician? Oh, it's the incumbent. Referring to the Aquino administration, the ones that he replaced. And Duterte, being a mayor from Mindanao, fashioned himself as, I am not a traditional politician. I am not rich, despite the fact that his father was in fact governor, despite the fact that he was in fact mayor for nearly three decades. But he created this myth that I am not a traditional politician. And that carried over, right, Robbie, again, most ironic, with Marcos now, again, running on the myth, on the platform that I am not a traditional politician. You heard our names from the 1970s and the 1980s, but right. I am not a trap.
Yeah. Right, so the establishment, as it were, very quickly, what do you expect in the near future? Now that he's won, will we see policies coming out? Will we have a 100-day plan? What do you expect?
That's what we're hoping for. He just announced today that he has formed a search committee to look for to form his cabinet. There is no 100-day plan, but you know, you would think that that's something that should be forthcoming. It's low hanging. It's not a very difficult thing to do anyway, to predict that everybody ran on a platform of jobs, reviving the economy, exiting COVID, and have a plan to revive employment for as many people as possible. So that's going to be the platform. I'd be surprised if it's anything other than that. The real question for the first 100 days is going to be stability. What is the modus vivendi with civil society? What's the modus vivendi with media? With the opposition, for that matter. Again, let me repeat, he ran on a platform and a promise of just one word, unity. But what does that mean? And people will also have to watch out for how does he manage really some awkward situations. We have a Presidential Commission on Good Government that was established whose single mandate since the 1980s is to recover $5 to $10 billion of documented ill-gotten wealth of the Marcos.
Right.
That's one office with one mandate. They have one job, get the ill-gotten wealth back from the Marcoses. And that's going to be a very, very awkward barometer and litmus test for him. How do you run, or how do you let an agency like that operate?
Well, we will be watching. Robbie, thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your time. Robbie Alampay, founder of Puma Public Productions in Manila. We'll be right back here on Consider This. Stay tuned. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our discussion about the outcome of the presidential elections in the Philippines and how it might affect diplomatic dynamics in the region. Joining us now is Dr. Azmi Hassan. He's a senior fellow at Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research. Azmi, Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s win. He will now enter office after 6 years during which Duterte had engaged China, courted China, even some pundits saying maybe courted friction with their traditional ally, the U.S. I'm just wondering whether there is any reason to think that Marcos will continue to pursue close relations with Beijing during his presidency.
Yes, Melissa, I think whatever Duterte relationship with China, I think will be continued by Marcos Jr., and especially regarding South China Sea, I'm quite a little worried because if I'm not mistaken, Melissa, during one of the interviews during the campaign, Marcos Jr. did say that the Hague resolution, the tribunal resolution, that found out that China has no right to claim 95% of South China Sea, I think Marcos Jr. do not agree with the tribunal decision. That what worries me. So what I see is that not only Duterte has a very close relationship with China, I think Marcos Jr. will make a very close relationship, more closer relationship with China compared to Duterte, Melissa.
Azmi, what do you think will be the problem with that? I mean, this superpower rivalry in the South China Sea, where has the Philippines been, you know, in your estimation, not just during the Duterte time, but also, you know, is there a coherent ASEAN policy that they've subscribed to? Or are countries like Philippines, because of the West Philippine Sea issue, I mean, are they largely left to create their own policies, bilateral policies?
The problem is that Philippines is part of the other three nations, including Malaysia, Brunei, and Vietnam, that has a big problem with China. So if the Philippines, starting from Duterte and coming Marcos Jr., start recognizing that China has right to claim South China Sea, when I say that Marcos Jr. is quite hesitant to accept the tribunal decision, I think the other three nations, which is Brunei, Malaysia, and also Vietnam, will have a big problem when handling the South China Sea claimants. And this includes China. I think that's where the problem lies, because ASEAN need to put one voice when facing China in terms of South China Sea. I think that's where the problem will creep in terms of foreign policy, specifically on South China Sea, Sharad.
Azmi, you know, some critics of Marcos Jr.'s campaign have accused him of presenting a whitewashed and maybe revisionist version of his family's history, his family's legacy. And this is to, I guess, invoke nostalgic populism among voters. And in response to this, Lim Kit Siang had warned that perhaps something similar might unfold in Malaysia. I'm just wondering whether there are lessons to be learned from the presidential elections in the Philippines for Malaysia in our upcoming elections.
Well, one thing for sure, Melissa, Marcos Senior era was three decades ago, and majority of the young voters in the Philippines, they cannot recognize the Marcos Senior era. But again, our scenario is just only a few years back, so these are totally different from the Marcos Senior era in the Philippines, which was a long time ago, and Malaysia was very recently. So when Lim Kit Siang said he's worried, I don't think so. He's worried too much, I guess, in this particular matter, because the totally political scenario, Manila and Kuala Lumpur, is totally different. And I'm sure our voters are quite matured enough. Because in the Philippines, I think Robbie said it just now, it's all about personality, or about personality cult. So I think it's totally different. So we have no worry. What happened in the Philippines, we don't have to worry that it will be hold on us, Melissa.
Okay, all right. Dr. Azmi, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Dr. Azmi Hassan, Senior Fellow at Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research. We're going to take another quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying. Sharad and I on Consider This. Joining us now, we have Dr. O Isani. He is a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Isan, looking at the outcome of the presidential elections in the Philippines, what do you see as perhaps some implications of Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s presumptive win? And what can the Philippines and even the world, us even watching from the outside, expect from his presidency?
Well, I think it was just as if yesterday when in 1986, when I was a very young teenager, I watched Bong Bong's father, Ferdinand Marcos Sr. He was topo in the popular revolution and so on. And there were lots of shoes, pairs of shoes of his mom, Imelda, being discovered, and I think it ran into the thousands. And now, 36 years later, we are witnessing the return of the Marcos dynasty. So I think the lesson, perhaps, it's not only for Malaysia, but it's, shall we say, a developing worldwide type of lessons that as long as you keep the people in sort of very not so well-to-do socio-economic conditions, and making them very poor, and then promising them with a lot of rewards and so on, if they work for you, then perhaps you could indeed come back to be the ruler of the country. And that indeed is what is happening in the Philippines, and I think it will not be so far away in Malaysia.
Isan, I mean, I was actually at university watching the EDSA revolution as you were a teenager, so I think we now know each other's age. But one of the things about the EDSA revolution was the media framed it as the return of democracy. But I think a lot of critics also noted it was a return of the families, basically. Cory Aquino, that icon of democracy, her family, the Cojancos, you know, all huge landowners. She was involved, you know, in the first year of her administration in this thing called the Mandiola Massacre, killing farmers. There is a kind of rotation of Filipino family elites, right, who have, and this is just perhaps just another turn which the Marcoses now have taken. Is Marcos really so different from all those who have come before him, including Maria Macapagal Arroyo, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, who's also responsible for, you know, the suppression of the left, the suppression of people, organizations, the murder of many activists? Are they really any different?
Well, perhaps it's a question of degrees, at least, if not a question of quality. Namely, for 20-odd years, the Marcos Sr. regime was indeed a dictatorial regime as universally recognized, whereas, for example, the perhaps the Macapagal Arroyo regime, as well as the Cory regime and her sons and so on, they had their excesses, but I think universally it's not as egregiously recognized as the Marcos regime. And let us not forget, when Ferdinand Marcos Sr. was toppled, Bongbong was already very much, shall we say, even a senior official of the country. I think the father made him the governor of their home province and so on. And there were various excesses even during those times. But of course, people have short memories in Philippines, just as well as in Malaysia. In Malaysia, of course, we have indeed also very short memories. I think, well, the day of the Philippines election was also the fourth anniversary of when Malaysian toppled a long ruling government, right? But now, I think a lot of Malaysians are indeed looking or harking backward to perhaps the return of, well, yet another very illustrious figure.
Okay, well, if I may just pivot the conversation very quickly to the diplomatic implications of the Marcos Jr. win. Might we see a continuation of outgoing President Duterte's embrace of China, and what might that mean for the relationship that the Philippines, the security relationship that the Philippines has with its longtime ally, the U.S.?
Well, I think the ball or the football is at the U.S. Court. If the U.S. is not as assiduous in pursuing, for example, for the return of all the Marcos loot in the U.S. court system and so on, then perhaps Bong Bong will be more amenable to be a good friend of the United States, with Philippines being a traditional treaty ally of the United States. But if the U.S. side is still very gung-ho, very assiduous in pursuing the return of some of this, shall we say, the Marcos loot to some of the victims and so on in the U.S. court system, then I think it is, I would not rule it out that the new Marcos regime, the Bong Bong regime, would then pivot itself more towards the China side.
Okay, Isan, do you think, very quickly, do you think Marcos, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. will be able to address some of the domestic concerns around the economy, around poverty, around unemployment, huge migrant labor force? Are these things really something that the Filipino elite even care about?
Well, I don't think so, but Marcos promised, shall we say, a sort of doling out of various goodies to his supporters if he were elected president. I think a lot of Filipinos are looking forward to that. But unfortunately, I don't think that will come into fruition. And hopefully, Philippines would still be able to withstand another 6 years. And, well, hopefully, he wouldn't repeat what his father did and declare martial law and so on. So hopefully, I would only wish for the best. I'm a columnist of some Philippine newspapers and so on. I could only wish for the best for the Philippines under the Bong Bong rule.
Isan, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Dr. Oh Isan from the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.